All right. Well, good morning, everyone. The time now is 8:32, February 17th, 2021, and I call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologists Examiners to order. On the agenda, item number two is the roll call. Ms. Michelson, could you please conduct the roll call?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Gill?
Here.
Dr. Meyer?
Here.
Ms. Shreve?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Item number three on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the regular session minutes of January 20th, 2021?
So moved.
Seconded.
We got a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Item number four, case discussion and decision. The Complaint Screening Committee pursuant to ARS 3221H may dismiss the complaint appearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints discussed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website pursuant to ARS 3221H1. Upon a vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records or A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. For those in attendance, please be aware the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present and request to speak. A person or representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by the chair. The committee may also have questions for those to speak. And also, this is very important. Please only use initials for patients and children. Be aware the content of many of the records involved in these complaints is confidential, and the content should not be discussed in public meetings. Be advised that the committee will go into executive session to discuss confidential records. Our first complaint today is complaint number 21-09, Dr. Lisa Outer. Dr. Gill, you're the lead. Would you like to provide a summary?
Yes, Madam Chair. I believe her name is pronounced Lisa Outer, is it?
Outer, sorry, thank you. Outer.
Well, I'm not correcting you, I'm asking. I want to make sure I have this right. At any rate, regarding the overview of this case, beginning in April of 2020, the 10-year-old daughter of MC, who's the complainant in this case, entered psychotherapy with Dr. Outer. Mother initiated the therapy. The therapy was not court ordered. Mother was the sole decision maker for the daughter. In July of 2020, MC and mother entered into litigation regarding parenting time and custody. On July 31st, court issued a temporary order. Mother was awarded sole legal decision-making authority for the daughter. MC was given unsupervised parenting time. In December the 8th of 2020, MC filed a board complaint alleging that Dr. Outer failed to provide him with daughter's therapy records despite multiple written requests. On December the 10th, the court ordered the following, that Dr. Outer submit records and notes to the court for an in-camera review, quote unquote, and the court will review and compare the records and notes of the treatment summary shared by Dr. Outer with the parents of Dr. Outer will either provide MC with the treatment summaries or order the release of records of treatment summaries or seen by the court as incomplete. On January the 14th of this year, court reviewed and granted mother's motion for the therapy to be designated as a safe harbor or safe haven therapy. Dr. Outer shall not produce notes of daughter's sessions. MC may access documentation in the files, such as registration materials completed by the parents and notes of Dr. Outer's communication with each parent. On January the 21st, Dr. Outer emailed available records, not included would be the progress notes, and MC confirmed receipt of the records on February the 5th. The complaint by MC is as follows. On December the 8th, board received MC's complaint. In April of 2020, mother initiated therapy as reported. The therapy was not court ordered and preceded the parents engaging in custody litigation that was in July. Litigation is now ongoing. MC, upon learning of daughter's therapy, contacted Dr. Otter requesting why mother was requesting a safe haven agreement for daughter's therapy. MC requested daughter's medical records from Dr. O in October and was denied records repeatedly. In October of 28 of 2020, MC emailed Dr. Otter thanking her for their conversation and, quote, to get her on record regarding daughter's treatment, unquote. On the same date, Dr. Otter said by email that she would provide a treatment summary rather than honoring the release of medical records. She expressed no interest once no part of the custody proceedings would be communicated with both parents going forward. On November the 16th of 2020, MC emailed Dr. O thanking her for the treatment summary, but asked her to comply with requests for medical records. Dr. Otter responded with concerns that the records would be used in ongoing litigation and the daughter may be negatively impacted. Dr. Otter then sent an email to MC and to mother saying that father sent a private email again requesting daughter's records. On November the 19th, Dr. Otter emailed MC, "We'll have the records ready for release." However, Dr. Otter changed her mind that same day about releasing the records. Mother filed a motion at that time in family court to protect the records and decided not to release records until the motion is agreed upon or ruled upon. Dr. Otter agreed to release the records on December 15th if the court rules that the records shall be released. Dr. Otter also said to MC, if court does not rule in a timely manner, consider subpoenaing the court for the records. Dr. Otter, on December the 4th, emailed parents to say she would refer the case to a forensically trained therapist since she is, quote, not trained in this area, unquote. MC asserted that he is entitled to the medical records and that Dr. Otter had failed to act in accordance with ARS 12-2293. MC asserts that Dr. Otter makes no reference to a statute, makes no causative statements, and insists that the record should be released. MC requested court to intervene if Dr. Otter deliver the records to him and censor her. Now the licensee response is as follows. Dr. Otter trained to work with children and adolescents. That's outlined in her CV. Parents involved in active litigation, court, family court, advisor appointed to assist. At this time, that is on December the 30th of 2020, family court did not rule or issue on parental access to daughter's records. On December the 10th, Dr. Otter was court ordered to submit records and notes for an in-camera review. Court will review the records and treatment summary and provide a decision as to which one should be released. According to Dr. Otter, MC's access to records is on pause, awaiting court's decision and ruling. Dr. Otter stated that MC, quote, filed a complaint before the time period that Dr. Otter was granted under HIPAA to respond with either a denial or production of the copy of the records. Therefore, his allegation that he did not receive a statement about the denial of records is and was premature. Mother continued to hold legal decision-making for daughter under the court ruling in July. Dr. Otter treated daughter from April until December the 15th of 2020. There were 30 sessions performed. And then she recommended a forensically informed therapist to treat the daughter after that time, who was to address issues of co-parenting and family conflict, which is outside her scope of practice. Mother requested a safe harbor status regarding daughter's therapy. meaning that both parents access daughter's treatment information. So that would be curtailed to avoid information from daughter being used in court. MC refused this request, a motion for doctor's oath treatment with daughter to be a safe harbor therapy was filed. MC first requested records on October the 23rd. MC reported his daughter's behavior towards him had, quote, changed. MC asked to agree to a safe harbor agreement to keep daughter's mental health progress notes out of the litigation process. Dr. Otter requested privacy for the daughter and offered a treatment summary. Treatment summary written 11-2 of 2020, MC's first request for records had been met with this agreed upon summary. MC's second request for records, November the 16th, stated that the treatment summary was reviewed and requested that Dr. Otter comply with the request for records. On November the 18th, MC emailed Dr. Otter claiming she denied his record request. MC was concerned with the alignment of Dr. Otter and the mother. Dr. Otter informed the mother on November the 19th that records would be released to MC. Mother said her attorney filed a motion to protect daughter's records under the safe harbor provision. Mother requested Dr. Otter to wait until court issues a ruling before releasing records. Dr. Otter emailed MC this information. Dr. Otter's email included that she would wait 30 days from November the 16th. MC replied that Dr. O had less than a week to comply and considers the court ruling irrelevant. MC wanted the medical records for, quote, continuity of care. Dr. O replied that she was entitled to 30 days. HIPAA allows for release of records and that a one-time request can be made for an extension. Dr. O, quote, was hoping that the court would decide this issue by December the 15th. However, the court was undecided and doctor requested a 30-day extension to January the 14th of 2021. Dr. Otter said she would release the records at that time if court did not render a decision. On December the 10th, according to the mother in a status hearing, court ordered for Dr. Otter to release the records to the court. MC objected and asked Dr. O to close communication with both parents. Dr. O reported on or about December the 15th that she had not received a court order directing her to provide medical records to the father or the mother. Additional information provided by the licensee. On January the 14th, the court reviewed the records in camera. The court concluded that the treatment summary is an accurate summary of the child's therapy and is a reasonable alternative to providing the entire medical record. Court ordered mother's motion for child therapy to be a safe harbor therapy, and that was granted. Father may access documentation, the medical record that do not contain notes of those sessions. And that concludes this summary. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. Thank you. Is the complainant MC with us today?
Madam Chair, I do not see that MC is present. He was notified of today's meeting, but he did not respond to my email about it.
All right, thank you. All right, just one more time. I just want to give him a, if you're here. Okay, we're going to move on to, I'll now ask them, Dr. Otter, could you pronounce your name? I feel bad if we're saying it wrong.
That's okay. It's a hard name to pronounce. It's pronounced UTA.
UTA.
My apologies.
It's okay. It's a hard name.
We do apologize. And Dr. Akins, you're with us. I believe you're representing. You're on mute.
There we go. How's that?
All right. If you both could formally introduce yourselves for the meeting, that would be great.
My name is Farron Akins. I am counsel for your licensee, and certainly I'll let her introduce herself. I know she has a few comments that she'd like to make, so I'll simply defer anything I might have to say until she's had a chance to address the board. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Elisa Outier.
Great. If you'd like to make a statement to the board, and then if your attorney wants to make a follow-up statement, then we may have questions for you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for meeting with me today to speak about the complaint filed against me. Just as background, I know Dr. Gill had mentioned a little bit about me. I'm a psychologist trained to work with children and adolescents, and I specialize in treating emotional and behavioral disorders like anxiety, depression, compulsive and related disorders, and neurodevelopmental disorders. In fact, I have additional training in working in diagnosis and assessment of autism spectrum disorders. I'm a faculty member in the clinical psychology doctoral program at NAU as well, and I have over 15 years of experience in teaching graduate level courses in child and adolescent psychopathology and development. I began working with my 10-year-old client, who I'll refer to as daughter throughout, about a month after the pandemic began to take hold in Arizona. So all of our sessions were conducted via telehealth. Presenting concerns included skin and nail picking, which was creating significant impairment in her life. So I worked with her from April to December 2020 with successful resolution of her behavioral symptoms. In October of 2020, her father made a written request for release of her records for the purpose of litigation. I received his written request and called him right away, left a message, and he called me back. We discussed his daughter's treatment, and I offered to write a treatment summary in lieu of the records request so that the parents could be informed of the treatment progress, but also limit my involvement in their litigation. He accepted my offer. However, the next day he emailed me asking for specific information about treatment and requested that I respond by the next business day. He also wanted to know if I'd make myself available for an evidentiary hearing scheduled for November 4th. I responded with a reminder I'd be writing the agreed upon treatment summary to be ready within a week. And I again asked him to be kept out of the parents' legal conflict due to concerns that it would compromise the therapeutic relationship and work with his daughter. I wrote that treatment summary dated November 2nd, and he contacted me again, acknowledging he received the treatment summary, but requested that I comply with the full request for all records. Again, I expressed my concern and cautioned the records release could damage the therapeutic relationship, but never formally denied release of records. Again, I cautioned and expressed my concern as to how they would be used and the impact on the child. I received a strongly worded email from father subsequently demanding the release of the records and stating that if I didn't release them, he would file a board complaint. Immediately consulted with two close colleagues, then with a risk management specialist at the trust, and soon after retained Dr. Akins as legal counsel. I've learned that in my consultations that Arizona's Medical Records Act sets a very high bar for declining release of medical records as a child to a legal decision maker, usually the parent, as is the case here. A provider has to show that the release is reasonably likely to cause substantial harm to the patient or another person. And it wasn't clear to me that this requirement was met in this current situation. So while I was still concerned about releasing my client's records, I felt the best course was to go ahead and provide them to father. I contacted him and told him I'd release his daughter's records to him, but I also contacted the mother and asked her if she wanted a copy. She replied with that additional information that her attorney filed for a motion for safe harbor with the court. And so I emailed father to let him know and asked for the customary 30-day grace period that HIPAA allows in order to allow the court to weigh in. I want to clarify a portion of the investigative report specifically regarding my decision to release records to father. That was delayed after learning that mother's attorney had filed a motion with the court for safe harbor. And as I was within the time frame that HIPAA allowed for timely release of records, it permitted me to await the court's response. So in deference to the court, I had father's request for records await the court ruling of the safe harbor issue. Otherwise, it would have taken away from the court's opportunity to rule on the safe harbor status, which could have directly impacted what records, if any, the parents could have access to. Ultimately, as you all know, my file went to the court for in-camera review. The court granted the safe harbor status and ruled that the treatment summary was sufficient. So the parents would not be allowed access to the progress notes. However, they could access the rest of the file. I've since provided both parents with the rest of the file in accordance with the court ruling. Overall, my client successfully completed treatment. Her symptoms abated, and we had a nice period of maintenance to ensure that her symptoms maintained resolution. I have released both parents' those records that have been ordered by the court. I've also learned a lot about this important crossroad between ethics and the law. I do respectfully ask that the complaint against me be dismissed, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Dr. Aiken, did you have any further comments?
No, I don't believe so. I'd like to just hold my comments until I hear whether any of the committee members have questions. I know the back and forth of who said what, who requested what at any point in time can get a little confusing. But I would just say the bottom line is this licensee never refused to release records and was always within the parameters of HIPAA as well as the licensing laws with regard to releasing records and notifying the parents of her actions at any point in time. So I'm sure that you may have some questions, and I know that Dr. Outhier will be happy to answer those.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for the doctor? Dr. Gill.
I just have one brief question. Dr. Outhier, do you want to comment a little bit about your decision to, delay your response to request for records? Would you like to elaborate?
Yeah, sure. The delay as far as releasing records had to do with the response that I received from Mother and with respect to her attorney filing for that safe harbor motion. So part of my reasoning was to wait and allow court to weigh in and guide me or direct me with respect to what parents would have legal access to.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. Dr. Myers, do you have any questions?
No questions.
All right, thank you. Well, now there's no further questions. We thank you, Dr. Outhier, for joining, and Dr. Aikens. The board's now going to go into deliberations. This is a time for the board members to discuss among ourselves the case. Dr. Gill, you are the lead. Would you like to start the discussion?
Well, in my review of the ARS 12-2293, my understanding of that statute is that there are exceptions to when a therapist receives a request for release of records. And I think the exception has been expressed here where the therapist wanted to wait for the court's ruling regarding the safe harbor issue. And it seems to me that the court eventually decided that the safe harbor issue was appropriate and made that determination in the middle of January. So it seems that the exception holds, and that's how I'd like to put it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. I would agree. I think the doctor made a good faith effort to make a good decision for both between the parents and also the court, and giving, I think, an opportunity for the court to weigh in, because that would that decision would weigh heavily, obviously, on what would occur. Dr. Myers, any comments?
I don't see any concerns here. Dr. Outhier was responsive throughout, was with court involvement, needed to be cautious here, and I think she managed all of this ethically. So I don't see any violations here.
All right. Is there a motion? Would someone like to make
a motion to dismiss this case?
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second to dismiss the case. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Dr. Aikens, also for being with us today. And there may be some follow-up just from the board staff.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very good, Madam Chief. Bye now.
Bye. Our next case is complaint number 21-07, Dr. John Zarkey Dr. Myers, you are the lead. Would you like to provide a brief overview?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We received a complaint about a neuropsychological evaluation that was conducted by Dr. John Zarkey, SN, completed in 2020 through Dr. Zarkey's private practice. The evaluation was done through telepsych, not in person. The complaint, the complainant states that he initially emailed the board staff on November 14th of 2020 regarding his concerns with Dr. Zarkey. He was instructed to complete a complaint form, which was received a week later. He also submitted additional email and a letter. He stated that the evaluation was done in error, that there were multiple issues that were wrong with it, that it was done through the computer, not in person. During an appointment with his physician, SN noted that he had gotten lost when it was completely dark, called his wife for assistance, and she helped him find a hotel to stay at. However, Dr. Zarsky reported that SN gets lost all the time while driving, even though it only occurred once. Dr. Zarsky stated that there was dangerous driving and inconsistencies with normal behavior, added concerns about alcohol use and impaired driving. SN has never indulged in consumption of alcohol beverages that would threaten his health or reputation. He also noted that he was praised by Dr. Zarsky for doing well on the testing, and is do not understand why that would change in the write-up of the report. Dr. Zarsky also wrote in his evaluation that SN became intoxicated with PCP that a doctor in jail had given him. Said that this is not accurate. SN did report that he had visions of seeing live people on his property, including several people on horses and several people in his ponds. And that was true. He did have those visions. However, he had consumed a substantial amount of alcohol the day before when he was arrested, and he knew that that was the cause, not PCP that had rather than PCP. On the day after the evaluation, Dr. Zarsky asked to speak with the wife of SN, and SN consented to that. Dr. Zarsky grilled the wife about SN becoming lost and indicated that it may be an indicator of Alzheimer's. He mentioned a degree of memory and problematic issues. He informed the wife that he would be reporting SN to the state motor vehicle department and that SN better not drive anywhere as he would be arrested and his car would be impounded. Dr. Zarsky requested that SN's driver license be removed by ADOT, and SN is now dealing with the situation of his license, and this is preventing him or being prevented from access to firearms because Dr. Zarsky felt that it was unsafe for him to possess weapons. The licensee's response, Dr. Zarsky responded in a timely manner, gave his background education and training, noted that SN's physician made the referral to Dr. Zarsky based on SN's memory functioning. Upon review, SN contacted Dr. Zarsky approximately 1 year before the evaluation took place. During the first contact, SN told that Dr. Zarsky that he was working on his alcohol abuse. issues and felt that he should take care of his alcohol use before submitting to for an evaluation. At that time, it was Dr. Zarsky's opinion that SN was avoiding the evaluation. Dr. Zarsky advised SN that he was available to provide an evaluation in the future. And in September 2020, Dr. Zarsky was contacted by SN's wife, who stated she wanted him evaluated, but was worried about how to proceed due to his resistance to the idea of being evaluated. Wife mentioned concerns about SN's memory issues, easily becoming confused, and that he was getting lost while driving. She expressed that the problem was worsening and there had been a progressive decline starting approximately 3 years prior. Wife also shared that SN had recently been arrested for domestic violence while intoxicated. Dr. Zarsky's impression was that the wife was seeking his services not to obtain a driving evaluation, but for a neuropsychological evaluation to account for SN's decline in cognition and psychological functioning. The evaluation took place. It was done through telepsychology. And Dr. Zarsky stated that he notified SN that if he believed SN posed a threat of harm to himself or others, Dr. Zarsky would be required to notify the relevant authorities. Evaluation was completed on 10-12-2020. Dr. Zarsky reviewed medical records and interviewed both SN and his wife. Rating scales of daily living skills were completed by SN and three of his family members. A neurobehavioral status examination and neuropsychological testing was administered. Dr. Zarsky noted that during SN's interview, he demonstrated extreme difficulty with mental control, was challenged by simple questions, and could not reach conversational goals, had active delusional thinking, and confabulatory features were apparent. He demonstrated poor insight to his condition and expressed reluctance to undergo the neuropsych evaluation.
Just a reminder to the committee members that we can go into executive session if we need to discuss the results of any evaluation.
Okay. Am I providing too much information?
I think we could scale it back.
Okay. A number of psychological batteries were provided. The measures that were given were easily adapted to teleneuropsychology platform, and Dr. Zarsky checked in several times with SN and the wife to make sure that they were able to manage the telepsychology nature. Dr. Zarsky also interviewed SN's wife, who noted that there had been problems with getting lost while driving, both locally and over distance, that he typically had difficulty retaining new information, often repeated questions and stories, problems with paying bills and managing finances, has become increasingly argumentative. Last year pulled a weapon and threatened, made threats, is currently facing criminal charges. SN has also been receiving psychological or psychotherapy from another licensed psychologist to address other concerns. At the end of the evaluation, during the review, Dr. Zarsky expressed concern about SN continuing to drive, and advised that he should cease driving, and not have access to weapons. SN stated that he would not comply with the recommendations about driving, and Dr. Zarsky advised that due to safety concerns, he was obligated to make a good faith request for medical review by ADOT. He then submitted a form physician review to ADOT. Dr. Zarsky's response to allegations is that Dr. Zarsky feels he made a good faith basis to recommend that his license be revoked by ADOT. He was in no way guilty of unprofessional conduct. His recommendation was both warranted and defendable based on others' needs for protection. It was his opinion that there was a substantial driving impairment, which presented an elevated risk to SN and public safety. So Dr. Zarsky noted that his recommendation to ADOT was well considered and founded because of a good faith basis to believe that SN's driving posed a danger to himself and others. And records were submitted for review. And that concludes my review, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer. SN, remember we just use initials, SN, I believe you are here today, is that correct? If you need to take yourself off mute, I believe you're on mute.
I've been listening to the a couple of cases you had before this, but
Right. Well, welcome, SN. Welcome today. I'd like to just give you a moment if you'd like to make a statement to the board, and then we may have questions for you.
I would. First of all, I have not gotten lost, as it was reported. I've called my wife for help with directions because I'm a fluke when it becomes accessible to the phone maps I have. And so I have called her for the best direction. She's very good at it. And that is the only time I have ever had a problem with being lost, except for one. And that was, I retired police officers lunch for Arizona. I'm from California, of course, but I joined them. And I have worked with the county attorney's office and still do. So I need a car for that, of course. I have not had a driving stop in 30 years, or have I had a collision in 30 years. And I put astronomical amount of mileage on my car when I'm working for these agencies today. While I was a Los Angeles police officer for almost 50 years, I have ran the traffic programs. I know every in and out of problematic issues with drivers, soft and not so soft, and have investigated many. Going back to the issue of PCP, I advised Dr. Zarsky 30 years ago. I had served a search warrant. I was in charge of a narcotics team out of the airport, and I served a search warrant with a team of Drug Enforcement Administration, federal, and my officers in Los Angeles police. And inside of the apartment, a gentleman was selling liquid phencyclidine in small quantities, ounce quantities of liquid phencyclidine. His bathtub was nearly a third full of the liquid that he was producing, a very expensive production, but it amounted to, I was not wearing a mask, three drug enforcement agents was not wearing a mask, and I became intoxicated, as did they, and we were hospitalized for 3 days with that intoxication. We all have heard about Rodney King's part in the riot, and Rodney King, prior to that horrible incident, when he was stopped by the Los Angeles police, threw people off of the hood of a car. Several people, men and women, officers in uniform. That's what PCP does. And of course, it has to do with a lot of imagination and fiction. I have never had that since. I did have a reaction the day I was released at the county, and I walked home 4 miles. My ankles were hurting. I thought that was a reaction to the alcohol. But that evening, I had the same reaction I had from pentacylline 30 years prior. And I have talked to several experts since. I tried to explain that to Dr. Zorsky, but he had his way of operating. I'm not going to go on to that. I was very familiar. I've taken a lot of psychology in my years of classes. I'm on the team of officer suicide prevention run by a New Jersey psychiatrist, a woman psychiatrist. And I've also worked for years with the Lutheran Church Stephen Ministry. Working with serious cases, just as a psychologist would do, only I was not a licensed psychologist. I was what would be determined a LP more than anything. And my first candidate was a woman that had her daughter raped and murdered. I think a lot of people were helped through my process. Let's go to the driving issue. Zorsky was telling me how well I did on the physical examination, that some people just don't get this. That was his word. My wife was upstairs and she could hear him from the system I had operating downstairs. And she's running an employment agency out of our daughter's bedroom. That is the office now because of the COVID. And she could hear through the closed doors and the monitors she was doing, Zorsky screaming. And he was screaming over the phone. Over the audit. And when he got to the point of suddenly, there was no discussion about driving. There was no discussion about anything at all, except the one time that I got lost. And to put that short, I got lost because 32 other people got lost on that road too. When I left the luncheon, there was a parade in Prescott. I drove the other way, thinking I would find the 17 and head back towards Flagstaff. Easy find, no problem at all. However, when the darkness came, it was so black, you could not see the hood of your car. And I turned to call my wife and say, hey, this is what's going on. And she says, go to the Best Western. We've stayed there before. I did. I drove down that highway, blind almost. And it wasn't because of any physical issue I had. It was because of the surroundings of the weather. And I had no control over that. When I received the Best Western receipt, the manager came up to me at the hotel. He said, do you know that you're the 32nd person checked in here because of the darkness and people were getting lost? Interesting. Some young, some older. I don't get lost often. If I don't have a familiarity with an area, I use a map or I call my wife and she gets the map for me. I don't drive lost. I don't drive impaired. That is the rule I have, and I do not drive impaired. I've been seeing a psychologist since way before I started seeing on my own, before I had a contact with Dr. Zorsky. And I have to tell you, the contrast is day and night, black and white. I'm dealing with a wonderful psychologist who has helped me immensely, and a neighbor, because I've had experiences that I thought, gee, that's time to have a sit down and have a drink at home. But I'm no longer doing that. My neighbor came over and informed me, I've got a 300-year-old drink that I'm going to talk to you about. What it was Italians did this 300 years ago. Mixed water and wine. And to the point where two glasses would not intoxicate you. And I've done that. And I've really been careful about intoxication. And I still am seeing this therapist for that reason. When you have two fellow officers and friends killed in front of you, and you have some traumatic things that I went through, and somebody offers you a drink of alcoholic beverage, you might be imbibing. You might do that. But as far as the excess, the only time I did that is that date that we talked about where I was arrested. And it wasn't an arrest because of domestic violence that day. It was a mistake by the officer who spoke to my daughter. And my daughter said, well, Dad had his gun out a year. Actually, it was almost 2 years ago. I never take my gun out with my family. I never wear it. And I definitely never wear it if I've had an alcoholic beverage. On that occasion, I was assigned to work with a gentleman that was both felon and illegal immigrant trying to get custody of his child. I received a telephone call from the mother one day, and I'd worked him quite a while at this point. I knew of his severity. He was in the Flagstaff, and certainly in the country illegally. He'd gone to a home that they past lived at, and the neighbor who lived on the house above that saw these gentlemen looking into the window, knowing the house was vacant. She walked up and challenged them and said, well, these people don't live here anymore. She noticed that both men were wearing pistols. These are illegal aliens. Also, he was arrested for bringing a large amount of drugs across the border. All of this while I was doing the investigation. So the next day, I got a call from the mother, and she said, our neighbor, where we now live, said that he came by, parked his pickup truck, got out, and walked over to the fence. He threw something over the fence, she said, as if he were feeding their dog. And this was a special dog. I got to know him. He was a rescue dog when I went to interview the family first. And that dog, when the family came home, was very sick. So they went to the veterinarian, Canyon Pet, in Flagstaff. And the veterinarian said, I'm sorry to tell you that your dog is demised, and it is because of rat poison ingestion. So this is what this gentleman was capable of. 2 days later, sir, at my home, this is important about the gun. 2 days later, I have video cameras around my house, and I put it up on a video camera, a white pickup truck stopping between my house and the neighbors, which is about 100 feet almost, 75 to 100 feet in between. Getting out of the car, and it was this same gentleman who was seen with the gun, who poisoned the dog, who smuggled the drugs across the border, and we were still in court at that time. And so I notified. He got back in without approaching either house. And, of course, I felt he was still armed. So I notified the detectives at Flagstaff Police Department, and they made a notation of it. Recently, when I refreshed a call to them when this incident happened, that was the night my daughter saw me with the gun on for the first time ever, because I never wanted her to see me with the gun, a pistol. Or any weapon.
Thank you.
That's what she referred to, but the statute of limitation was long gone from that, if there was any violation, and there wasn't.
All right.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but to be more continuous, I've taken so many psychology courses I practice psychology in the fields that I told you about I did. And I meet with a psychologist every year at the end. Los Angeles Police Department requires it for a weapons carry. This man is dangerous, in my opinion. I'm sorry to give that to you. I'm sorry to give that to you, but based upon my opinion and talking to this Dr. Zorsky, he is dangerous. Not only did he yell at me, and my wife could hear that upstairs, when he talked to her, he told her to get your wills in order, and he was screaming at her. This is the demeanor of a normal psychologist? No, ma'am, it is not. Not at all. All right, and I think his Dr. license should be deferred. That's your bag, not mine.
All right. Thank you. We might have some questions for you. I appreciate those comments.
I'm sorry to take your time.
That's what we're here for. We appreciate that.
I want my license back for one thing. I need it for work.
All right. Dr. Meyer, Dr. Gales, I'll start with Dr. Meyer since you're the lead. Do you have any questions?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, SM. Have you had any report or any feedback from your physician, Dr. Yi, about this report or concerns about any medical conditions?
Dr. Yi is the one to answer that contacted Dr. Zorsky. They are friends. They are associates off the job. And they spoke about this. And so Zorsky was the one that talked to Yi, and when Yi talked to me, he expressed a concern, and I told you, I don't get lost. First of all, you can ask my wife about that, and that was given. It was a commingling out of my control, and I had no one to go to. I didn't even consider seeing another therapist at the time until he came up with that. And he was yelling when he said it. My wife could hear him upstairs. He was screaming, actually.
Okay, thank you.
There's something wrong with that program.
Okay, I was just asking about Dr. Yi. Thank you.
But that was Dr. Yi's input. Okay.
Thank you. No further questions.
All right, Dr. Gill, do you have any questions?
Yes. Thank you for being here, SN. Why did Dr. Yi refer you to Dr. Zorsky?
He asked my wife and I if I would see a therapist about the drinking and so on. And I told him I would. Well, I chose my own. I didn't know he was going to go to his friend. I chose my own. And that's one I've still been working with and continue to work with.
I'm going to repeat my question. Why did Dr. Yi refer you to Dr. Zorsky?
I thought I answered that.
You made reference to choosing your own therapist, but eventually underwent an evaluation of Dr. Zorsky. I'm asking, why were you referred to Dr. Zorsky?
I can't answer that. Dr. Yi would have to be the one to answer that. And when
you don't know why you were referred to Dr. Zorsky?
Dr. Yi had this impression that I was getting lost. It was very detailed to him, but you'd have to know the personality of how he works. I've been with him 17 years, and you'd have to know that personality. He didn't tell me that he was going to seek somebody out. And I did tell him that I was seeing a therapist. And whether he absorbed that and whether he took it seriously or not, I have no idea. I can't answer that. Only Dr. Yi can answer that. But he contacted his friend who contacted my wife. They set up an appointment. And I was asked by my wife if because she said, well, we're going to have to pay him $1,500. I said, well, just for what? I said, I just paid $2,500 to an attorney on this case. And it's dismissed, by the way, and eradicated. we talked about an arrest. That is dismissed. And the court dismissed it. The county attorney dismissed it. And it's eradicated.
According to the record, once the referral was made, it took you 1 year before you decided to see Dr. Zarsky. Is that correct?
No, it wasn't 1 year at all. It was months. I don't know exactly.
It was a period of time.
Yeah, he approached me on a visit. Just conversation on a visit was all it was.
Well, I guess my question would be, why was the delay? Why was there a delay in the time that you met with Dr. Zarsky?
I can't answer that because Dr. Zarsky contacted me. I had already had a therapist, sir, and I was dealing with a therapist. It happened the week after Dr. Yi and I discussed alcohol intake, because I know I wasn't driving after I drank any, but I did have too much alcohol intake, and I realized that, and I discussed it. I don't want to do this, but I'm burying some emotions here. And I told him that. And I know that's a dangerous thing to take on alcohol when you do that. And I mentioned there was PCP mentioned here. Okay, I was exposed to it once. And surprisingly, that day that I walked home from the courthouse, that 4 miles, I didn't have a car, and my wife was out of the area. So I walked home. Very sore, and I had delusions that night. Well, thankfully, I had an officer that responded because of the delusions that I saw. I felt there were real people out here, and it was a psychotic experience. There's no question about it. And it was brought on by alcohol. And alcohol, acute intoxication, and awareness, you're all familiar as psychologists what that is. And that is a very, very fine product of that type of alcohol conceptions. And the officer that came had an experience identical. And he says, it's been 30 years ago now, but he says, I'll never forget that. Everything you told me just now, I experienced. And that was from alcohol consumption. So he says, I'm encouraging you more.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. Do you have you have more questions?
I just wanted to ask, once you receive the results of Dr. Zarsky's evaluation, did you consider a second opinion?
I did, and I took that second opinion from the therapist that I was seeing.
Well, a second opinion from a neuropsychologist.
Neuropsychologists, well, I speak to several all the time as friends. And considering second opinion after he presented himself the way he did, I'm telling you, he was screaming at my wife. And he's not, in my opinion, their evaluation should be made on Dr. Zarsky. But I'm not going to confuse my case with that. But that's my opinion, strong opinion. My wife has formed exactly the same opinion I have.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Dr. Gill.
That's all for me. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. I don't have any further questions at this time. SN, thank you very much. We are going to now move to Dr. Zarsky, and I believe he's being represented today. If you both could introduce yourselves for the record, I would appreciate it.
Good morning to this board.
Yes.
I represent Dr. Zarsky.
I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
Robert Beardsley.
Beardsley. Thank you, Mr. Beardsley.
And I'm Dr. John Zarsky.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Zarsky. Dr. Zarsky or Mr. Beardsley, did you have any opening comments you'd like to share? And then after that, we may have questions for you.
Yes, I'm going to ask Dr. Zarsky to briefly address this board, and then I will conclude.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Zarsky.
Well, thank you very much. And I want to thank the board for, the opportunity to hear the complaint. And, you know, I basically am just going to rest on the response that I made to the board, in that my concerns were based on my appraisal of CN and my opinion that his condition was worsening, and that the appropriate action was to initiate a medical review of driving, because I was concerned about him getting lost and his inability to seek help when confused. That's pretty much what I want to.
All right, thank you. Mr. Beardsley?
Yes, I'd just like to add, this is Dr. Zarsky's decision to recommend revocation of this patient's driver's license wasn't made capriciously, made on any on the basis of any one single criteria. His record thoroughly documented all the criteria which warranted his recommendation to ADOT. He was extremely proactive in the development of a telehealth evaluation test battery, which would best gate the limitations of the telehealth forum. And he stands by that test battery. I think that his decision to recommend the license revocation was well-founded and well-considered, and it's thoroughly documented in his records. We believe that there's no evidence of a violation of law or the community standards here. Dr. Zarsky is a preeminent clinical neuropsychologist. He has a lot of experience, and his training and experience in the community is a benefit to the community. We respectfully request dismissal. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Board members, do we have questions for Dr. Zarsky? I'll start with you, Dr. Myers, as the lead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, Dr. Zarsky, thank you for being here. Could you share just a little bit about what SN's wife shared with you about SN's driving?
I certainly, and thank you for the opportunity to respond to that question. When I first got a phone call from his spouse, she expressed concerns about him getting lost while driving. There was one event where apparently he was driving to Prescott and ended up in Mesa or someplace in Phoenix, lost and confused, and she helped him find a hotel. But then when we actually had our interview, which was conjoint with the patient and his spouse and myself, she also related that he had been seeing a psychologist locally in the Flagstaff community for a period of time and had progressively had difficulty finding that office. He had gotten lost four times, she said, while driving to his psychologist's office that he was, you know, familiar with in the past. So my impression on the feedback provided by her was that his condition related to driving was worsening. He had this incident some time ago, and then more recently had frequent episodes of getting lost on his way to his psychologist's office. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
What else did you base your evaluation about his ability to drive? What other findings did you base that on to?
And before you answer that, Ms. Galvin, can you just make sure we can't say any diagnoses or anything that's medical? Let Ms. Galvin make a comment here.
Right. If you feel, Dr. Zarsky, that you're not able to answer that question without divulging confidential health information, it's very easy for us to move into executive session and hear that answer and allow committee members to ask you additional questions about SN's health.
Well, then I will defer, given your feedback.
So I would make a motion that we go into executive session to discuss confidential information.
Dr. Gill, do you second that?
I second.
All right. We have a motion and a second to move into executive session to take testimony regarding confidential information. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. We will now magically move into executive session.
Before you do that, may I have just one, maybe 10 seconds to 15 seconds?
Essen, you will be allowed to come into the executive session, as will your attorney. And after that question and answer session, if you feel that that's something we can discuss in public, you'll have that opportunity. Or if you want to say what you want to say in executive session, if it relates to your confidential health information, you will be allowed to do that.
The question I have was my therapist and getting lost to that. My wife is right here and she is able to talk to you about that.
All right, we're going to move. So, Mr. Beardsley, everyone else, you'll see, I think there'll be like a little prompting to go into executive session. Just please push that button and then you'll magically will all reappear in executive session.
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair, this is Heidi. I'm just confirming that I'm sending the three committee members, Ms. Galvin, Ms. Michelson, Dr. Zarsky, and Mr. Beardsley into the breakout
room. Wait, I think,
and Mr. Essen.
CSN. Do we have a phone number for him where we can just call him and tell him to go back in?
They were struggling. They could not figure it out. So I instructed them just to exit out of the meeting completely and to come back in. So it seems that that's what they're doing.
Okay.
So we're waiting for Dr. Zarsky and Essen. Okay. And I think Dr. Zarsky's joining right now.
Yes, that's his number.
All right, great. Dr. Zarsky, you're back with us? Dr. Zarsky, are you back with us?
Hello.
Hello. All right. We're still waiting for one more person. Thank you, Ms. Michelson.
Okay. I believe we have SN joining right now.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Welcome back. All right. Sorry, so we're at the second session. I just want to make sure we have everybody back. Mr. Beardsley, there you are. Okay. So we're at executive session. Are there any further questions for Dr. Zarsky? I do have one. Dr. Zarsky, is there in your meeting with SN, was there any time where you feel as though you were yelling or loudly speaking, or could be interpreted as loudly speaking?
She's listening. Mm-hmm. She, you heard him.
No, I don't. I did not yell at anyone.
Okay. All right.
I can tell you my wife is here to dispute that. Seriously. Okay. And it was yelling. It was no other description given. That is not the truth.
Right.
As I have heard not many of the truths from this man.
But all right, thank
I
you.
Will tell you for SN. A fact, my wife SN, is
thank
here,
you.
She will tell you.
We've heard from everybody. I appreciate that. Are there any other questions from the board members? Okay, hearing none. This is the time where the board members go into deliberations. We will discuss among ourselves only, no interruptions from anyone from either side. And Dr. Meyer, you are the lead. Would you like to start the discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in reviewing the records provided and hearing from SN and Dr. Zarsky, I understand there's a difference in opinion. I do not see any ethical violation. My recommendation would be that SN seek another neuropsychological evaluation, not from a therapist, but can go see someone else for a neuropsychological evaluation. That being said, I don't see an ethical violation here.
All right, thank you. And again, we're here to look at the laws and to see if there were any laws or ethics that were violated by the psychologist. And I would agree with Dr. Myers on that assessment. Dr. Gill, do you have any comments or thoughts?
I would agree with Dr. Meyer. The concern here is someone's loss of a driver's license. I've been involved in cases where people have lost their driver's license and have gotten very upset with the doctors that have made that determination. It's a very high conflict, a very difficult situation for a a health professional to be involved in. And a lot of health professionals shy away from even making the decision as a result. But in terms of the issue at hand, there doesn't appear to be any ethical violation that I see. There is some confusion in terms of the issues that were raised. For example, you know, the issue around PCP, what SN said and what Dr. Zarsky said conflict. Issues around how many times SN got lost. That doesn't seem to be consistent between the two parties. But I don't see any ethical violations or violations of statute in my understanding. So I would agree with Dr. Meyer. Thank you.
All right, thank you for those comments. Is there a motion
I'd make board? A motion to dismiss the claim.
We have motion. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. And I'd like to thank SN, Dr. Zarsky, and Mr. Beardsley for joining us today. And there may be follow-up from the board, but the motion has been, the case has been dismissed. We're gonna move now on to item number 5, adjournment. First of all, I'd like to thank the staff for all the preparation and getting all the material to us. We really appreciate that. And Ms. Galvin, of course, always for your legal advice. And is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And a motion to adjourn. And a motion and a second. And Dr. Gill and Dr. Myers, thank you so much for all of your preparation. I really appreciate it. All right, motion and second, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, our meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Take care, everybody.